This episode with RVD discusses topics on mental health and depression. Therefore, some language and contents discussed on the show may trigger an adverse reaction. If you or someone you know is in crisis, we encourage you to call the National Alliance on Mental Health hotline at 800-950-6264. Once again, that's 800-950-6264.
Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting.
Hey, we want to welcome everyone to another edition of Vegas Bad Boys of Podcasting. And we have RVD on the phone, and we're just going to let him go ahead and get started on his talks on mental health and depression. Glad to hear the talk about it.
I'm glad to talk about it. I've always known that just by sharing my story that I could inspire people, but it was just before about, hey, I was a normal kid in a normal school, didn't know anybody famous. Followed my dreams, look at me now. And that was really like the only story that I had.
Right.
Until like in my late 40s, I experienced some of the worst times and some of the best times of my whole life. And I feel like I just grew up in my 40s. Everything before that, when I look back, I feel like I was a kid. I mean, like how could I, even like in the acting roles, when I look at myself before that, it was like I was trying to fake it. I hadn't even felt real emotion. Now it's so much easier to tap into that. So I only knew before that I could inspire people to follow their dreams and they could be successful. But after I started getting feedback from my documentary Headstrong, that's when I started realizing that people really were being helped, you know, if not just touched in a positive way, because they could relate to me in ways they didn't think that they could, just because I open up in the movie and I talk about going through some really rough times and how I had to deal with that. And so now I'm realizing, you know, that talking about some of the not so heroic, favorable times in my adventures can help a lot of people, because a lot of people deal with depression, and sometimes they never do. Sometimes it's too often, you know. I myself come, and you know, there's a lot of stuff that I've just never talked about. This is something I don't think that I've ever talked about publicly. So, you know, I'm glad to be able to. When I do write my autobiography, you know, it's not really going to be about all the matches, you know, categorically described, because I don't remember life that way.
But right.
There'll be a lot of things that fans have never heard before, you know, in rehashed interviews. So this is one of them, though. You know, I actually come from a family that everybody but me has always been on medication, like as long as I can remember. My mom, wow. My sister, my dad, and my brother,
wow.
They all took different forms, you know, whether it was Prozac or whatever. There's a couple different. My dad took some of them, and my mom, but I was the only one that didn't take medicine, and I never got checked for depression.
Huh.
And I always thought, you know, I always figured maybe, you know, I was self-medicating with the marijuana, which, you know, it does help. It can help.
Yeah.
It can also go the other way, but people are affected differently. That's why we're learning to utilize the CBDs more.
Right.
To get, you know, more of a desired effect. Yeah. And I'm on top of that too. By the way, I'll be ready to talk about my efforts in that world real soon, because I'm trying to find some brain protecting CBDs that I can stand behind, and I'm you know, just at the beginning stages, but it's I think hopefully it'll move fast. But,
excellent.
So having said that, though, that I didn't medicate, I've always felt, when it comes to emotional times, like let's say my friends' funerals, I've always felt like everybody else was stronger than me.
Wow.
I've always looked around and I'm like, I'm the one bawling. And when you look back to the ECW tribute to Louis Piccoli after he died, I'm bawling and I can't stop. And I don't think anybody else is even crying at that point. Like, we all, you know, they've already accepted that he's dead. I don't know. I mean, it was a long time ago. I don't, maybe somebody else was crying, but I just remember always thinking, like, why am I so much weaker than everybody else?
Right.
And that, yeah, just justify, like, hey, I have a really big heart and care a lot. And so I don't know. I kind of dealt with it. But then, yeah, after the wife left, dog died, dad died, I did reach a point of major depression. So now I can relate in ways that I couldn't before. You know, a lot of people, yeah, everybody, sometimes your mindset and the spirit you put yourself into with your thoughts, sometimes that can help, you know. And that's why people are like, think positive thoughts. And I've always said that too. But when you hit a certain point that I've experienced, I couldn't kick out. I was down for the count.
Right.
I was down for the count. And it was like, I knew that I needed a hand. I needed a hand up. I got so low. And it's ridiculous because I knew I'm RVD and I knew things, life's always going to be great. I get love everywhere I go. There'll always be opportunities. I knew that, but it didn't seem to matter at that time because I just felt so low and worthless. And like, I just remember like, when I met Katie, that was the situation I was at. Like I was telling her, look, you should run the other way. You know, I'm so fucked up. Like, you don't, I know nothing to do with it. Trust me. And I felt like that. I just felt like I've got absolutely nothing to offer somebody. And luckily she saw through it. But that wasn't the only help though. I mean, to be honest, I had to go, I had to talk to somebody. I had to talk to a psychiatrist first, so that then I could get, or maybe it was a psychotherapist, and then they have to recommend a psychiatrist to get meds.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's okay. So, that was the hardest thing, making that phone call. So hard.
Uh-huh. It was 2016, and I was going to the hospital. It was December, and I think I'd gone to the emergency room about three times because I kept thinking I was having heart problems. And no one up to that point in my life had ever suggested that I had anxiety and depression. No one. And every time I went into the emergency room, the doctors would say the same thing. You're a chronic case, an absolute, you know, symbol of what anxiety is and what depression is. And I'm like, really? And so I talked to my doctor and she said the same thing. So then now I had to make that phone call. And it was like terrifying because the next thing you do is you're going to be sitting in with that person. And we have that societal thought of what, psychosis is, you know, what a psychologist does, what these people, when you go to them, they're shrinks, you know. And it was so weird because I felt when I was talking to the psychiatrist, I felt like I was performing, like I had to answer the questions right, you know. And she saw right through it right away and broke me down right away. And it was like, holy shit. I didn't realize how fucked up I was and how much I kept that stuff inside, but yet did stuff like you said, like, you know, I have no problem crying at something, but you're right. Am I weaker? What is the difference? And it's incredible, you know, when you finally make that breakthrough. What did you discover in that first, you know, meeting? You know, how was that day for you? I mean, what was it like getting up that courage to go?
So it wasn't like, I don't think it was the same experience for me. I had actually had therapy before. I had couples therapy.
Okay.
And although the wedding didn't last, the therapist even said that, because she didn't think it was going to last. But I really got a lot from her, that couples therapist. She was so good. And I'm always open and genuine anyway. I mean, anyone listening right now is going to know that. So I never have a hard time opening. I open up too much. That's my flaws. I don't know when to, you know, I'm going to have to get my autograph in a line with 1,000 people, and I'm sometimes telling, you know, some really personal shit, and it's just, I don't know, it's just how real I am. But for me, I had good experience before, because the other lady would be like, well, you're a type A alpha male, that's normal, you want this in life and this, and you're going to, and I was like, whoa, that makes so much sense. This time, I really didn't get that much with the lady. She was more just like a middleman, so I could get to the med.
Right.
And that's how I looked at it, because I saw her just a few times, and I quit seeing her. I would usually get like maybe one small thing out of every hour that I would spend with, and I'd be like, okay, I think I can use that. But that one wasn't so good for me. But it's not a matter of me not being able to open up at all. It was just, for me, it was just, I don't know. I tried so many times to pick that phone up, and I would just hang up. Or eventually, I would dial a number. I would start to dial, and I would hang up, and I would just bawl. And I think it was just admitting that I needed help.
Yeah. Yep.
I think so.
Well,
like, admitting it on that level. Admitting it on that level. Like, okay,
right.
I need to fucking tag out. I'm not kicking out. I'm fucking done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Rob, you know, first I'd like to say, first and foremost, you know, you're very courageous in anybody that's in that situation to identify that something's not right. Number two, to take that courageous step of making that phone call and starting a journey where you really don't know what to expect. You don't know where it's going to lead. I, much like you, very open person. For me, you know, it's funny you said that you started finding out with regards to, marriage therapy. I found out that I, was struggling for maybe before my first marriage when I was in marriage counseling. And, much like what was told to you, you pretty much knew the marriage wasn't going to last. And I continued, seeing, that same therapist and learned a lot about myself. And, it is very scary for most people because, you know, society can sometimes be not as acceptable, but I think a lot of that is from just lack of information. Sometimes, you know, they hear of someone with depression and either you'll get people who walk on eggshells for you and kind of treat you like an invalid, or, you know, people that are, you know, just totally just the opposite direction. So, you know, like I said, to have that courage and to come forward and, you know, even now speaking about it, it's huge. And it is definitely going to touch somebody and help them make that huge decision because, as I think everybody knows, you know, there's some people that don't ever make that phone call and unfortunately can go the other way, you know, and we never want to hear that.
I'm extra motivated by the fact that my friends keep committing suicide. And that's motivating for me, you know, to share whatever I can, because awareness is like one of the first steps, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, some people, yeah, they can like get yourself out of the situation that brings you down. And I do believe in, you know, I've always used like the law of attraction and thought positive thoughts and stuff. And that is how people perceive me. And, you know, I'm professional enough to, even when I've been in the ring and in my mind, I was just like going through some horrible shit. People would see me on TV and they would say like, hey man, I saw you on SmackDown. I can tell you were having fun in there, man. That's great. And I'd be like, wow, I must really be professional because that was not fun. And that's because, mostly that's because like the end of my marriage, like it could have, we could have cut it off like in 2010. Like after that, it was all downhill and it lasted like another 8 years. So it was just like fucking with my mind more and more and more.
Right.
Like it was something I knew that I needed to fix. I wasn't okay with it going the way that it was going. So it was very distracting in all ways. And I actually did get anxieties that ended up festering in this weird condition that like tied my lungs up with a lasso. It was crazy.
Wow.
And
wow.
This is something. You know what? I used to get claustrophobic, and that's the best way I can describe it. I was getting claustrophobic in the ring.
Wow.
And it was so weird. I had no idea what was going on. This was during one of my returns. It was in 2000. I think this was 2004. It was the second year of my return. So it was when they weren't doing shit with me anyway. I was there for like 5 months.
Right.
And I asked the doctor, I said, you know, because I was trying to figure out what the fuck's going on, because I'd be in the ring, and all of a sudden, like, I couldn't breathe, and I was just like, I thought like I was going to die, you know, and it was just like, sometimes I would just kick out, and I'd roll out to the floor, even though it didn't make sense during the match, just because I felt like I was going to die.
Wow.
Anyway, I mentioned it to the WWE doctor. I just said, hey, I don't know, could, like, cholesterol, like, cause something like this? He goes, do you have high cholesterol? I'm like, no, but I'm just trying to figure maybe. Yeah. And so that guy, because I mentioned that, I got pulled off the pay-per-view, and I got suspended until I got checked out.
Oh, wow.
I had to get an Yeah. I had to get an EKG. I had to get an echo. I guess an echo card again, the same thing. I had to get, like, a stress test, you know, running stress test and all these things. And everybody said that I was in phenomenal shape, of course. But then there was the one doctor that said, you know, this isn't my area of specialty, but I think it's in your head. And I had no idea what he was talking about until I put it together with the depression that hit, you know, probably like 2 years later, like 2015, 2016 was when I really went down.
Wow.
Yeah. For a little while.
So, you know, in that situation, you know, you're going through this, I guess, you know, coming up in years, my dad is turning 70 this year, and I kind of, you know, I don't want to think about it, but, you know, it's inevitable. It's human life. To have your dad, who I know was a strong, you know, presence in your life, to have him pass away, was that kind of the topper of everything? Do you think that's when you were just like this, like, how can get, you know, why is everything shitting on me now? And like,
it seems like I saw it coming, and then I prepared myself to overreact to that. I used to, way back with the therapist that I did get a lot from, the marriage counseling, whenever that was, I don't know, 12, 13, 14, somewhere around there. Anyway, one thing that I did always sticks with me, that she said, I used to do this thing called depressive hypothesizing.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just imagine in my head, like, worst case scenarios, and get myself depressed over it. Like, even way back then, my dad was healthy. But I would imagine, just because he's older and you think about these things sometimes,
right,
I would imagine how sad it would be, like, if he died, and I would think about it until I'm crying. And I don't know why I would do that, but that's something that I used to always do, depressive hypothesizing. And I know, like, when the wife left, like, all I had was the dog. And so I used to imagine, like, oh, my God. Like, what if the dog died? Boom. And the dog did die. And so I already had that pictured as the worst-case scenario. And then my dad was going downhill. Of course, I would do the same thing. Like, oh, no, I don't know if I can handle another blow. I put myself in that condition where I was like, no, I'm so weak right now that if my dad goes, I really don't know if I'll be able to handle it. And then boom, he goes. So I kind of feel like the whole thought process and the pathway there, you know, is on the way down. It was just like, you know, I went down so far that, you know, I couldn't turn around. And I used to just like burst. I wouldn't even know it's coming. I'd be out in public, and I would just start crying, and I couldn't stop. Like, you know, I'd be with somebody having dinner, and I'd be like, oh, sorry, I didn't know this was going to happen. I would just be bawling and sick before I started, you know, before I got help, which I think, you know, the first, depending on how bad it is for people, I do think there's a positive lifestyle that helps. I also think that a good therapist can be really helpful. They're trained pros. They're not all good. Not all chiropractors are good, but you get a good experience with one. I totally believe that can really, really help. And a lot of people, if they have insurance, you know, that'll pay for it. And then for some people, meds, I've always been a strong believer in meds. I've always said that, you know, not in abuse, but in the fact that we have medication to improve our lives. And what I've learned is that brain chemistry is something that you can't always control with your thoughts, you know, and it's really the serotonin, the dopamine, the all these I call them Mighty Morphins in your brain. that's some serious shit, and some people, you know, need some help to adjust their brain chemistry. Otherwise, you know, otherwise it could be a disaster. And that, you know, I mean, a few weeks ago when Ashley killed herself, that makes like three friends kind of hung themselves. And it's, you know, honestly, I don't want to do that.
Yeah.
It's in my mind, and just the thought, you know, like, holy shit, I didn't think they could do that. Could something take over my mind and do that? And so that's why I'm in the front line of, you know, spending a lot of energy this year into researching the neurotropics in cannabis that can help protect the brain. And, you know, I'll keep you posted on that. But that's like a new adventure I've been really more motivated in. Even the movie Headstrong, like, I wanted people to see the movie, but now more than ever, I feel like this drive for concussion awareness, and my movie does open up that conversation, because as I'm doing now, I'm sharing my experiences.
Definitely.
So, Rob, you know, you speak a lot about your journey in researching you know, the use of CBD, you know, to kind of help. The one thing that I found in, you know, when going to school and researching is, you know, a lot of psychotherapists are actually saying that they call it microdosing with THC is actually something that can be very useful. You know, obviously a smaller percentage of THC, I think they're saying three milligrams, you know, regularly, could be something that could help with some of the stronger symptoms of depression. But one thing that
there's an article, by the way, I'm sorry, but no, there's an article, by the way, in this month's Time magazine about this very thing, and the NFL developed a pregame pill of microdosing and strong with CBDs that could protect the brain during the game.
But, exactly.
Please continue.
No, it's okay. In you know, what I also think about too, as far as myself, is, you know, not everybody can microdose, or maybe he's not ready for that. But the one thing I whenever I get opportunity to share with people, is you know, ways that I kind of deal with my depression, because, you know, some weeks you're great, some other weeks it gets bad, and when it gets bad, it's for me, I try to walk through myself and try to identify, okay, you know what, this is what I'm feeling is something I can't control. It may not be tied to anything realistic at the time, and I try to just get myself focused, and I'll do some meditating and try my best as I can to motivate myself and to try to walk through it and realize it's like a wave. You know, it's going to pass, and I just have to try to keep myself as positive and around as much positive people as possible, so that I can get through this rough patch. And I realized when I started doing that and identifying in my head the length of time that knowing that this will pass, that was helpful. And when I started talking to other people who struggle with depression, they kind of talked about the same thing, how they would kind of head coach themselves in kind of walking through this. Is there something that you kind of do with yourself when you hit like a low rock
bottom? Absolutely. I'm so glad you asked that, because I think we're going to give some different perspectives here of dealing with stuff, and I think that's great. So for me, and I also want to mention that I know that most people that are depressed have most people in their lives don't believe it. You know, they're just, quit it, cheer up. What do you got to be depressed for? And of course, I got that all the time too. And those people don't understand how fucked you are because of your brain chemistry. I just want to say that, because I know everybody listening deals with that. Everybody does. Yep. And also, I've always been like a positive energy guru, and I've been inspiring people while I was depressed, and that was that amazed me, because I was like, wow. Anyway, I got a bunch of thoughts going in my head at the same time, so let me answer your question. So I got to a point where I got this really great advice from a friend of mine. He's also my Hollywood agent. And I was just, you know, telling him, I don't know, I was like, it was when, like, man, my voice was so weak during that time. Like, anything that I recorded or whatever, I could hear it in my voice. It was so low. And anyway, I was just, you know, it was like, I didn't know, honestly, I was like, I didn't know, you know, what I couldn't imagine, like, you know, just how the end of the day was going to be or whatever. I didn't think about killing, I mean, I didn't want to kill myself. But I asked myself a few times. I was like, hey, my friends kill themselves when they get depressed. Can they be that much worse than I am right now? And I would say, do I want to kill myself? And the answer was always no, but it bothered me that I even had that conversation.
Yeah.
But, but anyway, what I did, though, and this is what helped me, is I still do, is I learned how to live in the moment, because I couldn't enjoy a whole day. I couldn't even be happy for an hour, but I could enjoy the moments. And I was, at that time, you know, I was like in between relationships, and I was going out, you know, and I was able to plug in and be like, wow, this is a really cool place, really cool company. You know, my body feels good. I had a buzz. This is a good moment. And I learned how to connect with those good moments. And I put a lot of energy into that, and pretty soon there was enough good moments to start taking up some considerable time of my day. When I first started dating Katie, that's exactly the mindset I was in. First three times we went out, I was just like enjoying the moment. I was like, oh my God, this girl's like so beautiful. And again, I got such a good buzz. I was drinking a lot there. But that's how I felt happiness, though. And it was and then eventually it was more and more happiness. And that those were like little steps that I used, you know, to climb up and out of that, out of the funk.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, myself, I totally see that, because I find myself, I almost call it like microdosing happiness, in a sense, because what I found to get myself going was I would do a lot of just like going to the comic book store, or, you know, finding something that I liked and going and buying, you know, five comic books or something like that. And it just gave me a sense of, you know, stability, like here's something that I like, this is good. Yeah. You know, and I, you know, it took me away from those personal thoughts that I was having that, you know, become the darker points. And I just started replacing those with a little more of the light. And that's wonderful. And obviously, I mean, you know, I've seen so far, you know, how you've beamed every time we talk about Katie, man. It's like you can sense that was something that relationship came into your life right at the right point, because
totally,
yeah,
couldn't have been any earlier. Yeah, couldn't have been any earlier. Or I wouldn't have been man enough to handle her. You know what I mean? I totally would know. I had to go through some serious experience and then be able to just, you know, appreciate her, and she's just amazing. So yeah, I always will light up. You know, my ex wife got cancer in 2008.
Right.
And I was never allowed to talk about, I'm sorry, not allowed. I was never able to talk about it without crying. Like every time in any interview that anybody asked me about it, because at that time that was the worst thing that I'd been through. Right. And so every single time when I do an interview, if I would start to talk about when she got cancer, it would just touch that button in my brain and remind me of that pain, and I would start getting teary-eyed. And that was always until I started medicating, say, at some point in 2016. It took like 2 weeks to kick in, and just like everybody told me it would, all of a sudden, like, bam, it worked. And I was able to talk about that, and I was able to talk about, her getting cancer. I was able to talk about my dad, you know, dying. I was able to talk about my dog dying, which really used to trigger it a lot, because the dog was like my baby.
Right.
And it just used to really trigger everything, because I just felt like 4 years old, like her whole life was taken from her, because she went to the ex, took her to get her teeth cleaned, and the amnesia put her out. Total surprise.
Oh, no.
But that was really, yeah. But that at that point, I really felt like life was stacking up against me. Like, you know, like, I have such a great life. Sometimes I think I have to balance out a little bit, and I got to eat a little bit of shit. But I felt like my life was so great that I had to eat a lot of shit, and I couldn't wait till the wheels of karma turned back around, which thank God they have now. Now everything's so awesome. You know, I fought the marriage like the whole way, the divorce, I mean, because I thought it was a mistake. I looked at being divorced as being a failure.
Yep.
And it all the way till the end, I was like, you know, I didn't want it. But if I would have known how happy I am now back then, oh my God, I would have been for the divorce back in 2010 when she started realizing she hated me. Absolutely.
Do you think some of that we have as a, you know, maybe as human beings or as just a country, is just this stigma of certain things, like if you get married, you're supposed to, you know, to death do us part. You know, things that are institutionalized that we grew up with, that we grew up around, that in reality, you know, sometimes you can't control certain things because, you know, you're an individual and you're marrying another individual. And sometimes, you know, life changes you and things happen. I mean, do you think
that, I agree.
Yeah.
1,000%. I'm totally on the same vibe with you there. 1,000%. You know, part of living in the moment is realizing that this moment has never happened before. So forget about any preparation you had for this moment. It's never happened before. There's never been a, you know, whatever date, whatever time it is right now. Yeah. So don't let me go through that because I don't know if this is live. See, I'm protecting the show. It's all about protecting the business. But absolutely. And, you know, something else about being in the moment and realizing that it's never happened before.
Oh, what happened?
I guess he was in the moment.
My phone dropped it. Call failure. I hate fucking... He's probably still talking.
Yeah.
That's fine.
Sorry, I've been completely quiet. I'm dealing with some stuff, too.
That's fine, man.
Why did that happen?
My phone all of a sudden just said system failure, so it just totally dropped it. I apologize, bro.
One thing that I wanted to mention, because, I don't know, I think it's a good point, and maybe it could help somebody. I had to accept the moment of how incredibly fantastic Katie was in this bond that we had, because obviously by that point life had beaten up on me pretty good. So, you know, I didn't want to open up to anybody. I didn't want to be in a relationship. I couldn't be that trusting, you know.
Right.
I couldn't have had that great of an opinion on jumping into a relationship, or who knows, you know what I mean? But definitely I'd been, by that point, you know, I'd been... lied on, cheated on, hurt, blah, blah, all the above, whatever. But none of that, I had to forget about all of that. I can't carry that around with me forever, you know what right. I mean? And then just be, that was the wrong girl, for sure.
Yep.
But, I could have totally passed up what I have with Katie and just been, you know, like not ready to recognize it. And it could have just been like one lunch date, you know, or whatever. But instead, you know, I had to accept, you know, this moment is so awesome. And there's so many awesome moments. Like, every moment with her is awesome. And so I just, like, plugged into that. And I'm so glad that I did.
Well, it's scary, too, because you're basically, you know, you're at a state where you don't know about it yourself. You're questioning your own being. And then you're about to let someone, like you said, into that atmosphere. It's scary because
it can be, although to be honest, when I think about how I felt at the time, I really felt like I had absolutely nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And that's why I turned to alcohol too. I was like, you know what? I've never had like a scandal or anything. So what if I get pulled over for drinking and driving? I was getting so drunk every night, every morning. I just figured I deserved it, and I wanted to change my thoughts so quickly when I woke up. I just wanted to drown the thoughts out, you know.
Yeah.
And that led to some pretty crazy times, but I'm so glad looking back that I didn't, like, hurt anybody innocent. Like, that, I don't even think that went through my mind. I don't think I ever thought about that because I just, you know, was confident the whole time, you know, like, oh, I can do it, I'm fine. But, you know, honestly, there's a couple times I didn't remember getting home the next morning.
I
thank God, you know, run someone off the road or something. Like, it was really stupid.
Yep.
I have no problem admitting that. I was really stupid for a long time. Most people that saw me in 2016, for sure the first half of it, and probably the last half of 2015 at least, if not more of that, most people that saw me during that time saw me drunk. And at the wrestling shows, some of the wrestlers would even say, like, Rob, you're not you. You're different. Mm. I'm drunk, motherfucker.
So Rob, you know, kind of going back to what you were saying about, you know, being, you know, a positive guru and whatnot, and how you're able to help people, even though that you were yourself dealing with your depression and dealing with things. I could totally identify with that. A lot of my work that I was doing during my worst times of depression, which was interesting, was I was what you would call a mental health technician. And I worked in an acute lockdown facility with adolescents and adults, you know, struggling with various amounts. But on the wing I was people struggling with depression and self-harm. It could be a very intense job. And, you know, at the time, I didn't know. I was helping people and really just helping out. But it wasn't until 5 years later, and that's when I was going through pretty bad, you know, with my second divorce, and as you were stating as well, you know, I kind of just felt like a failure. Like, you know, when it came to marriage, I just had nothing great to offer and was really kicking myself in the gut. And I ran into a store, just doing my regular hobbies, or not hobbies, what do you call it, errands. And this adult comes up to me, young adult, and he's like, I remember you. And of course, I didn't know who it was. So, you know, I was like, oh, well, I'm sorry, I don't remember you. And whatnot. I said, you really helped save my life. And it shocked me. And I still didn't realize it immediately. And he had told me the story, and it dawned on me. He was brought in, he tried to commit suicide. They put him in observation in what we call a quiet room, but it's basically, you know, nothing can harm you at all. I was on what's called a one-to-one. To where, you know, my job is to make sure this person doesn't invent a way to try and take their life, and to try and just be there and be comforting and be calming. And he talked about the conversations that we had and whatnot. And the fact that he told me kind of at the right place at the right time, kind of just how the wheels of karma work, that low time in my life where I was kicking myself in the gut, and that kid telling me that 5 years before I helped save his life, because something that I was very passionate about him, letting him know that you have worth about yourself. You know, that's just the interesting thing about how life is you never know with the decisions that we make, good or bad, how it affects or sets up for helping or hindering or saving somebody else's life. So, the many people that you no, thank you. I mean, and many of people that you've helped. You see what I'm saying? It's just, and there's probably many more people that you will come into contact with, even with what we're talking about right now, who you will touch their lives so deeply. And it's kind of like, you know, what a great place to kind of be in, like you said, living in this moment right now, and being able to help somebody, you know, is just an amazing thing.
True that. I couldn't agree with you more. That's very rewarding. And I do have people share their stories with me sometimes, you know, and they are pretty touching. I got to admit, like, 100 years ago when I was just starting out with wrestling, I thought it was really weird. Like, I remember a lady coming up to me. She would come to the show in this town in Georgia every 3 months or so. And she said that she wrote me a long letter about how I helped her getting through hard times with her divorce, and I don't know, maybe she had a heart attack, whatever. And at first it was like really weird, because I just figured, well, they see me wrestling and somehow they make up the other 99% of who I am in their mind.
Right.
And honestly, that is still one way to look at it. But obviously I go out of my way to share my true stories and experiences, and also to educate where, when people give a shit to listen, and where I think it's important on stuff that I might know. So I do go out of my way to not be, you know, the two-dimensional RVD that most people might know. But even if that is all they see and they get positive energy from it, and even if that is an image in the image that they have of RVD from watching me on TV, even if that isn't the real flesh and bones here with all my flaws that they don't know about, it's still pretty fucking awesome, you know, to be able to, yeah, to represent that. And they show it when they see me. Everyone's so happy, you know, when they in public when they see me. Grown men become little kids, you know, they're like, RVD, oh my God, dude, how excited. Yeah, it's like, it's really cool to be able to spread all that positive energy. And something else, I'll tell you, I was in Chicago, and I was trying to do my own little mafia tour. I had an appearance the next day for the at a wrestling show. Just appearance, signing autographs, taking pictures with the fans. And I was leaving MG and Kana's house, going to where Frank Moody committed suicide on the tracks. I got a phone call, my dad died. And I was like, guys, can you take me back to my hotel? And I was thinking, you know, like, what's the right thing to do? And the next day, I went to the show, and I decided not to tell one person what happened, but just to tap into their energy. And yeah, it was just like so much love and positive energy. And like, and it just, they kept me lifted. Like, I counted on that, you know, to get me that day. And so, because of moments like that, I totally don't understand when they say that other celebrities like hate their fans, yeah, or don't want to be bothered, or think encounters are beneath them. I don't know, because you know that kind of shit, you know, is, that's as genuine as it gets.
Do you have maybe a little bit of a perspective, or maybe a little advice for anyone who might be listening, who might be, let's say, someone in their teenage years, someone who's in their early 20s. And, you know, sometimes you go through stuff, but at that age, you don't know where to turn. You don't know if anyone's on your side, you know. And then people, you know, also at that age want to start getting into something like wrestling, or, as I did, acting at that time, or, you know, music. Things that are not the most kind professions to you, especially at that age, because, you know, when you want a pat on the back for something, more so you're going to get kicked to the curb, you know, 9 out of 10 times. Is there something that you could kind of, you know, put in perspective, or something that, you know, they could kind of focus on and maybe take away and say, you know what, Rob is right. I got to look at doing something like this.
Yeah, well, first off, I would say, from my experience, being a kid sucked, and life gets so much better once you get to be an adult in the real world. Yeah, then you become responsible to pay bills, and you get adult problems and stuff, but just being a kid and having to socialize with other kids,
yeah,
it's so hard, because like everybody has their own values. The kids don't understand that. They don't even know their own values. Their values are something that their parents told them, so then they're repeating it, and so they're picking on somebody, you know, saying, you're not supposed to do that, or why do you hang out with that guy, or why do you wear that, or whatever it is. It's because I got different values than you, motherfucker. And as an adult, I think you're allowed that, you know.
Right.
So that's one thing that's really cool. But also, you know, I think if somebody of any age, if they're feeling depressed, I think they should try to find somebody to talk to. And also, if you've had just the one bad experience with talking to somebody, don't ever let one experience of anything be your opinion of in standard of what that always is. You know, people do that with pot all the time. They get high one time, so then they think people that smoke all day every day are as blasted as they were, and they're like, I can't believe people think they should drive like that.
Right.
It's one experience is one experience. And I've seen two therapists. I'm 50-50.
Yeah.
But I would say try to talk to somebody. I don't know if it's embarrassing. It's not for me. And I really think, you know, that it can help. Sometimes just talking to a friend helps or whatever. But, you know, talking to someone that is a professional that has the tools to maybe help you and explain to you why you're thinking the thoughts that you're thinking. I mean, that's something that you should take advantage of if you can.
Do you think, just out of curiosity, when you were at, you know, the height of your traveling and, you know, the ECW into the WWE, and you were on the road a lot, did you find yourself noticing any of the depression type thoughts then, or did it really start to come when you were spending more time at home?
That is a good question. I think that I would do, you know, like I said, sometimes I would do some depressive hypothesizing, you know what I mean? I would do that sometimes, like, maybe not, though. Maybe I didn't really do it back then. I really don't know. I just searching my brain right now, I think it might have been more when I got home, you know, and I think, you know, like the major issue that I saw in my life, because I don't handle stress well. I mostly have a pretty stress-free life, just like it would appear when you see RVD and you feel his vibe. I don't deal with it well. If I have a problem, I really need to solve it. You know what I mean?
Right.
A lot of people, I think, live with stress. They hate their job. They hate their partner. They hate their car. They hate their life, whatever. And I really don't. You know what I mean? I have a lot of love, and I try to focus on that. So when I do have a problem, and the marriage thing was a major problem,
right.
And so I think that was the major catalyst, you know, for my thoughts, you know, that were anything but positive, and that did happen. It was a lot more problem once I came home. When I was on the road, you know, then everything was fine. And she was happier when I was on the road than when I was home, for sure.
Right. So let me now, I'm going to throw a weird one here. This is kind of a curveball.
Oh.
Do you think, and just using that as the basis, having, you know, been away doing your job and then coming back to home life, do you think that you can see and relate into what's going on with our soldiers who are coming back with PTSD? Because they're always doing their job. And a lot of like what we like to say is, oh, it's because they were, you know, involved in combat or war or something like that. But there's guys with PTSD out there who weren't involved in a war, who didn't see nearly the same shit as someone else. And yet when they come back, they just can't deal and cope with being a regular person. Is that something that, you know, maybe we, you know, I don't know how we can fix it as a society, but is it something that you can kind of see a relation there that, you know, when you're doing a job on the road and then you come home, a lot of times that can cause anger and depression?
So for me, I think that I'm always the opposite. I actually hated being on the road mm-hmm. and loved being home. Oh, can you still hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry, I thought I lost you. And there were times when I felt like, hey, I need to be home because I need to be working on shit, trying to straighten things out at home. When I'm gone for 2 weeks, it's just delaying that. And I knew I was digging a deeper hole the longer that was going on. But also, I've always really liked being home more. And I never really, I mean, especially at least after ECW, I never really got into the, or enjoyed the camaraderie of the brotherhood as much as the other guys, you know what I mean? Like, they would take 5-hour drives, you know, after being on a 4-hour flight together, and then get to the hotel, and then still want to meet up in a room so they can talk about wrestling. And I was never like that. That's why I had very few riding partners. Mostly I rode by myself, drove by myself through most of my WWE career, and I always want to be home, and I still do. It puts me in the best negotiating power because I want to say no when people, you know, want me to be somewhere else, and the other guys try to get out there as much as possible, so their value, you know, goes down and mine goes up, and it works out that way. The universe takes care of me, but the truth is, you know, I love being home, and it's not even when I had problems at home. And I wasn't able to work on them because she was gone or whatever. I still enjoyed it. It was a lot of work being on the road, really. And I did it for a long time. And it got to be where it was, you know, all business and not much pleasure, you know, except for, you know, there were moments. And being in the ring has always been a moment.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, even if I have a shit day or whatever, when I come through the curtain and everyone's cheering for me, like I've always been able to plug into that moment,
right?
Even before I knew what I was that I was doing it, you know.
So could in that case, then do you think that maybe there was almost a little bit of depression that you had to go onto the road? So almost the reverse, where when you were leaving, it just became, okay, this is business as usual. It's, you know, it's that weight on your back, as opposed to being at home and being able, like you said, to just kind of enjoy, you know, your lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I have no question about that. That's why, like, I was having anxieties when I was in the ring before I recognized, you know, that I was depressed and way before I hit the major depression. But yeah, those anxieties were like 2014-ish, and the marriage started going south like 2010. When I was on the road, I guess I got off the road with WWE though in like 2007 as far as being full time. So I don't really remember doing that. No, I was down during that time too, because I guess around 2008 is when I remember things were going bad between 2008 and 2010, and it was already like it felt like she had checked out.
Yeah.
And so like I, looking back, like I tried to, you know, carry that way too long. With that. If I would have, I could have saved a lot of pain and a lot of money.
Yeah.
but then it wouldn't have got me to exactly where
you
I am
are.
Right now.
Yep.
That's how I got to see it. Yeah.
So Rob, you know, kind of hearing what you're saying, just a thought, you know, earlier you said that you've always been a very caring person, and with being a caring person, you know, kind of when you're at home, not only is it more of your comfort place, but also too, you probably aren't tasked with having to, you know, I won't say burdened, but at least experience other people's, life, to where you can you then have the opportunity to focus on yourself, what you need. It's kind of like your camp. Do you see what I'm saying? To where you know that you can
absolutely
focus right in with yourself. So it's not so much maybe going back on the road. You know, I ain't gonna lie, being on the road would probably have to be pretty exhausting after a while. But you know, going out, you knew what you would have to then be a certain type of person, or not type of person, but conduct yourself a certain way, because you are a caring person. And like you were saying, meeting with fans and really just living in the moment of meeting with those fans. And then also you have these other responsibilities, people pulling you this direction. You know, was that, you know, kind of what you were feeling through some of those times, you know, would feeling like everybody wants a piece of RVD, but what does RVD need for RVD?
Here's the thing with that. Like, I never had a problem with being professional, and I felt the obligation, to work and to my contract. So, I never, you know, there was times where I felt, believe me, I was counting the days till it ended, always. Like, every run that I've had, I'm counting the days until the contract is over, and that helps get me through. Let's see, what was I going to say? Oh, I'm sorry, that. I was, shit, I did lose my train of thought. I had a point. What was the question?
it's pretty much the question, you know, you being at home and you're kind of in your own place and you're able to focus on yourself, do you feel that being on the road and having these obligations, because you're a professional, did you feel like sometimes that interfered with what you needed for yourself?
I felt like that my personal life needed my attention and I couldn't be there. And that's typical for most jobs where, you know, one of the two is on the road. So there was that, you know, but I never had like a struggle with it. Like maybe I should skip and not go to work, except for being burnt out. That made it really hard to go to work being burnt out. But honestly, I think the feeling that I wasn't wanted at home made it a lot easier to leave. And yeah, also, man. Through the best and through the worst, I did put marriage first always, and that's what my dad taught me to do. Yeah. And I wanted to prove that I had those values, you know, to myself. So she knew always, even till the end, like if she ever needed me, I would have left the building if I was in Italy or whatever and gone to her. And also, I knew that definitely during the last 10 years, I definitely knew that the opposite was not true. I was down her priority list somewhere way below her going out and chasing her own dreams and finding out who she really was. And so, you know, we both had that understanding. So that made it easier for me to be out on the road, even though I was hoping that progress would happen as far as, like, either we're going to decide to stay together or we'll go ahead and end it so that I'm not, you know, paying with my life and with my funds for something that, And because I took such good care of her the whole time, then it means I got to pay her after she takes half of everything, too, in the end. But anyway, that's a whole other story.
Was there any, was there ever a point where, you know, I know, I knew that she got sick. I knew she had the cancer. I knew she did, you know, get past it. Was there any point when, during that period, when that happened, that she projected any of, like, any anger or anything on you personally?
No, not really during that time. I think she was appreciative that I was there, at least for the first part of it. And then after a while, you know, I went back on the road, but we had somebody, like a nanny per se, living with us to help take her to her chemo appointments and stuff. I don't remember, you know, resentment from that happening, particular thing. Yeah.
Okay. No, that's good, because I just want to make sure that, you know, there wasn't any, you know, any of that kind of feeling going on, because, you know, when you try to, you know, when you are supportive and stuff, I went through a hell of a relationship that, it was long distance, and it was, you know, in the end, the best thing you can do is learn, you know, get yourself, when you get out of the funk, then you got to kind of look at and learn from what your habits are and kind of go, okay, I'm seeing patterns.
Everything. Yeah. I learned a long time ago, as you go through life, your perspective has to change because you're looking at it from a different point. Mm-hmm. So that makes perfect sense, you know. Besides, don't try and tear apart where my marriage went wrong, because I can go to day one. She was the wrong person, and now I can see that,
right,
seeing all the red flags from the beginning. And we were both real young. And you know, it happens. I wouldn't hate her if she hadn't hit me with a huge list of lies at the end to try to get as much money as possible. I wouldn't even hate her. I would just be like, hey, thank you for releasing me, because my life's so much better now in every possible way, you know.
Yeah, so, well, that's those
I'm
are
grateful. The, grateful.
Yeah, I mean, no, seriously, those are like the exact, like, that's my sentiments as well. It's like, I mean, we went through a bitter end, but at the same time, you're absolutely right. If I had to see her face to face again, my first thing would be, you know what? Thank you, because I'm appreciative, because what I've gone through in the last decade or so, the growth I've gone through and the opportunities I've had to, you know, advance who I am. It's huge. It's huge. And, you know, and yeah, you can beat yourself up, because I was in, you know, a pretty low funk. I was close to, you know, relating to where you were. And, you know, when you get to that point of being able to kind of, you know, gain control of it again and be like, okay, you know.
Yeah, you know what? You know what? I physically beat myself up, I guess, you know, by drinking 64 gallons of alcohol a week. But like, I didn't regret any of my decisions. I didn't regret any of my efforts during the whole thing, or any of my my loyalty, because like, again, it got me where I'm at now. And so it wasn't like I blamed myself for anything. So that made it probably different than a lot of people that afterwards are looking at it, you know, beating themselves up mentally. Because no, I didn't do that at all. I was just like, life, why are you kicking me in the balls, yo?
Right. Yeah.
now, I mean, it's like I moved from LA to Vegas. I love Vegas, and I got an even, I mean, life's better, bigger and better in every way. Bit better, bigger house. I mean, the more I talk about retiring, the more my value goes up. And hey, I'm thinking, of course.
Exactly. one of the things I do want to bring up, you know, because I think this is something that I want to give credit to where credit's due. So when we were at StarCast, we had a vendor's table this you know, past weekend, and since Diddy Steve was actually the one who was out and about going to all the panels and the meet and greets and, you know, getting an aspect of what was going on while we were on the other end. And Steve, you know, heard you talking, and I just wanted him to give a little bit of the background of how this came to be so that we could, you know, let listeners know that sometimes when you hear things and it just clicks, you know, to go, oh my gosh. And, you know, I just very glad Steve was the one to bring this to our attention.
Yeah, definitely. So, Rob, as was already mentioned, I attended as many panels as I could over the weekend, and the fact that you spoke so openly about your you know, mental health and the things that helped you through really spoke to me, because I am somebody that deals with mental health issues currently. I've been too proud to seek any kind of help, or seek out anyone to listen. And I really appreciate you being so open and so frank.
Cool. Right on, man. I really appreciate that. I would have no idea if you didn't tell me. You know, I'm just learning this, and so I will do more of this. Hell, I love talking about myself.
Thank you.
One favorite subject.
One of the quick things that I want to ask you, if you don't mind sharing, is, and if you do, if you don't want to share it, that's totally fine.
I think I can handle that.
what kind of medications are you currently taking to help?
Yeah, I guess I guess that feels a little bit weird and personal. So
yeah, that's why I said.
I take two. I take one kind in the morning, one kind at night, and okay. But fuck it. One thing that I take is a form of Wellbutrin, and one is a form of Lexapro.
Okay.
Like a generic name, escitalopram and bupropion. Yep. So. You know, it took a while to get the right mixture too. Like the doctor would say, "Here, you know, try this," and then, you know, I'd be calling like, I can't quit balling, and he's, "Oh, okay, well, you know, take half of this," and it took a while, but then when I was there, it was like, bam,
yep.
You know, once in a while, I feel like, I don't know, maybe I should be able to, feel more happiness, but then, I don't know. It's totally worth it, and at the same time, you know, it's conducive with my intended behavior, my zen. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like I don't show a whole lot of emotion normally. If I do, I'm usually being sarcastic or having fun imitating someone's emotions because usually I'm the straight emoji face everywhere I go, and. And so, and because of that, you know, I like that my mood is like that. But yeah, so it has one of my doctors, not the one that gave me the meds, but another one that I trust, told me that you only want to be on that for like 2 years. And so I asked the other doctor that does give it to me, and he says, well, my case is a little different than normal because we're not sure if we should count this as like one major depression that lasted like a fucking year, or should we count it as several times when I dipped up and down? And so I'm taking them in the meantime, and I don't know if I'll always take them. Everyone right. else in my family takes them nonstop, like for years. They haven't got off of them. And, you know, it's like I said, it's very conducive. I don't think that if I didn't take it, that I would like jump for joy and clap my hands and get excited, you know, when the Deadwood movie is back on, you know, or something. But at the same time, sometimes you know, I do remind myself how grateful I am and how happy I am, because sometimes I can't tell by my face or by the inside of my face, if that makes sense.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you know, Rob, it's interesting how you were talking about, you know, pretty much your medication formulary. That's one thing that society is slowly getting around, is identifying real people who do take regular routine medication, and understanding that one thing that you did say, that it takes a while to get the right formula. And that's something that people don't get. A lot of times, unfortunately, society looks at medication as it's the one pill, it does everything, that's it, done deal, this is how the person's going to react to it. Done.
Right.
That's not the case, as you know. I mean, you'll go visit your doctor. They'll ask you a series of questions. They'll check your vitals and your records, and they'll augment or doctor whatever they feel they have to, so that you can get the best results. And I like that you use the word conducive, because that's probably a number one thing when people are, getting their diagnosis and they do take the route of medication, is they're finding the right medication so that they can still live life and be as productive as possible, and making sure that it is addressing any symptoms that they may have, whether it be, you know, with mood stabilizers, or if it be with anything that's going to help them, you know, with anything that they're dealing with at the current moment. So I'm glad that you actually shared that, because a lot of people don't know that.
No, people generalize everything. They generalize pot, like they think, oh, here's what pot does to me. They have no idea how much they smoked or what kind they smoked. They don't do that with alcohol. They usually know the difference between a wine cooler and, like, you know, straight up absolute, but they do that also with meds, you know. And I believe that, like, Prozac can be dangerous to mix alcohol with. Not necessarily the ones that I told you that I was on. They are different, and of course everybody reacts differently to all drugs put into their body, but that's something that people generalize, and they really are different. Just, you know, just like I said, with weed, with a lot of things, that's just easiest for people to think of it all as it's just the same reaction, and there's a reason that there's all these different kinds, because they invoke different reactions.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, we're talking about chemicals in our brain. And being able to, you know, in a sense, regulate or increase thereof that, you know, our chemicals we have. So I think the one good thing that we all have to look forward to is the convergence of social media, the convergence of technology. You have massive amounts of information. Yes, there are some that are not very great sound sources, mm-hmm. but you have so many that are. And you have so many people that can form a dialogue, that can give, you know, whether get on YouTube and give their own testimony of mm-hmm. their own journey. And in that way, now people can have access to that and see that, you know, I'm not alone, yeah. you know, and we can still live life and moving forward. And that's why I said the work we're doing today, I'm totally living in the moment and just feel so happy and humbled to be a part of what's happening right now, because it's going to touch a lot of people's lives. It's going to open a lot of eyes up. And I honestly will say we'll probably be saving people's lives.
Well, I hope so. I appreciate this proper platform, you know, to talk about it.
And really quick, for anyone who's listening, and I know that people, you know, tend to always kind of throw this out there, but it's so important. The National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is an organization. You can go to suicidepreventionlifeline.org to look up information if you need more information to guide you in the right direction. Or if you are having thoughts, man, 1-800-273-8255. That's their number. They're always there for people to reach out to. So please, I know, you know, with Ashley just recently passing away, I personally had a friend freshman year in college, you know, just getting to know a kid. And Scott, he had a relationship with a girl back home, and things were not going well. And one day he just hung himself in the dorm. And, you know, at 18, he never got to experience, you know, adult life. Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, obviously, you hurt the ones you leave behind. And that's that's, it should be obvious, but it's worth mentioning. Somebody, a friend of mine, told me this story recently, which really kind of hurt the heart. But he said that he had a friend who lived, who really, really looked up to Chris Benoit, was his hero. And he said that he went through a divorce, and Chris Benoit was like his crutch, that he was like leaning on and shit. And he said Benoit hung himself. He said that his friend fucking hung himself after that.
Oh, damn.
Wow.
You don't think about all the people you, that it affects, you know. It's the ones that the ones you leave behind that it really hurt.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, cool. Don't kill yourself, everybody, for real. It's not, I can't believe. I don't know what it's like to think that oh my God, I'd be better off dead. I don't know. Apparently, some people do know that thought. It's scary. Get help. Get help, because there's enough grief in the world.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, Rob, look, thanks for your time, man. Truly appreciate it. I'm listening to your story, and even my brother's here with the Vegas Bad Boys, the podcast, and I'm telling you, I'm even learning things from them that I never knew, and it's touching. Sure. And that's why I try to present myself as always being available to anyone that's going through anything, to let them know that I'm here for them. I'm here for that hug. I'm here from that talk. Anything that I need to help you get it through, I'm here to do that for you. And for other people that are out there, you may think that, you know, well, I'm not suffering through this. You still play a major role. You may know others that are going through this, and it's our job to help get them to where they need to be. And so this was definitely a great conversation and eye opener, and I really appreciate you for coming on and talking about it.
Awesome. Great right. Show, guys. Hopefully we reach some people and touch them in an appropriate way.
Yeah, no problem. In an appropriate way.
Yeah, thanks again, Rob.
Follow me at the Real RVD.
Yep.
Follow me at the Real RVD. Watch that strong. Stay alive. Be grateful.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Rob.
All righty. Thank you.